Welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Sandra Astor-Stave, and today I'll be reading from The Economist magazine, dated June 8, 2024. We'll begin as usual with the World This Week politics. Narendra Modi looks likely to serve a third term as India's prime minister after his BJP party and its allies won a slim majority. The ruling alliance won 293 seats compared with the opposition's 234. Mr. Modi has claimed that they would win upward of 400 seats. The BJP itself lost 63 seats compared with the last election in 2019. Imran Khan, a former prime minister of Pakistan, was acquitted of leaking state secrets in a ruling by the High Court in Islamabad. The former cricketer will remain in jail for a separate conviction. He is appealing the case. South Korea said it would resume military activities along its border with the North. President Yoon Suk-yeol suspended the military agreements between the two Koreas after Pyongyang sent balloons carrying rubbish over the border. It called them gifts of sincerity. Seoul vowed to protect the lives and safety of its people. Donald Trump was convicted on all 34 counts of falsifying business records to hide hush money payments to former porn star before the election in 2016. Mr. Trump called the trial a disgrace and said that the real verdict would come on November 5th, the day of the election. It is the first time that a former American president has been found guilty of a crime. Mr. Trump, who will be sentenced on July 11th, vowed to appeal. His campaign said it raised nearly $53 million in the 24 hours after the verdict, and that more than a third of the donors had given for the first time. Hunter Biden's trial in Delaware began this week. Prosecutors allege that the president's son lied about using drugs while buying a revolver in 2018. Another trial over allegations that he failed to pay his taxes is due in September. It had seemed that Mr. Biden might avoid the two ordeals altogether until his plea deal with prosecutors fell apart last year. President Joe Biden signed an executive order that would limit asylum claims at the American southern border with Mexico. The rule prevented people from crossing the border illegally from applying for asylum once encounters with border control officials exceeded an average of 2,500 a day, a threshold which will be easily crossed. New York abruptly canceled contentious plans to introduce congestion pricing on cars driving downtown. The scheme was due to begin on June 30th, but had been postponed indefinitely. It had been predicted to raise $1 billion annually for capital projects in New York's Metropolitan Transit Authority. Nigel Farage, a high-profile Brexiteer, said he would take over as leader of Reform, a right-wing insurgent party, and stand for Parliament in Britain's general election. A stronger showing for Reform would be bad news for the Conservatives, who are lagging badly in the polls. The Economist's prediction model puts the chance of victory at less than 1%. The European Union's voters started heading to the polls for elections to the 720-member European Parliament. Voting takes place from June 6th to 9th, but no ballots will be counted until all the votes have been closed. An informal coalition between right-center, center-left and liberals is expected to again win a majority, but the parties of populist right are likely to improve their standing. More than 350 million people are eligible to vote. Veterans of D-Day landings in Normandy returned to the beaches on June 6th to mark the 80th anniversary of the start of the liberation of Europe. Joe Biden, Francis Emmanuel Macron, and Germany's Olaf Scholz and Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine were among those attending. No Russian representative was invited, despite the country's huge sacrifices in the Second World War. The African National Congress lost its parliamentary majority for the first time in 30 years since the end of apartheid and elections on May 29th. The party which got 40% of the votes will need coalition if it is to form a government. The investors hope it will do so with the main opposition, the Democratic Alliance, which got 22% of votes and has sensible economic policies. There are concerns the ANC might instead form a government with radical populist parties, such as the Economic Freedom Fighters and Mankunku Mazuza, both of which want to nationalize land and banks. Zambia's creditors approved a plan to restructure some of its $13.4 billion in debt, which will allow the country to emerge from default after 3.5 years. Meanwhile, the IMF will probably augment an existing $1.3 billion bailout by providing an additional $388 million in financing to the drought-stricken country. Joe Biden revealed an Israeli proposal for a pause in the fighting in Gaza and the exchange of Israeli hostages held by Hamas for some Palestinian principals. This would form the basis of a long-term cessation of hostilities. America said it was waiting for a response from Hamas, the Islamist group in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel bombed a school in Gaza, claiming it contained fighters involved in the October 7th attacks. Hamas-affiliated press said the strike killed at least 27 people. Missile attacks by Hezbollah, the Lebanese military militia come political party, sparked wildfires in northern Israel and the Golan Heights. Israeli shelling started fires in Lebanon near the border. On the visit to the region, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, said Israel was prepared for very intense action in the north. Egypt announced that it would quadruple the price of subsidized bread. The subsidy was due to cost 125 billion Egyptian pounds next year, more than 3% of government spending. When the government tried to reduce subsidies in 1977, deadly riots ensued. So far, no response. The response has been muted. Claudia Schoenbein was elected as Mexico's first female president. The former mayor of Mexico City won with more than 59% of the vote for the ruling Morena party. The country's markets have been spooked by the large mandate handed to Ms. Sheinbaum. Nabei Nabuki was sworn in as president of El Salvador. He vowed to cure the country of its illnesses. Mr. Cooley, who was re-elected with a huge margin in February, is popular largely thanks to his crackdown on crime. He helped change the international image of his country of 6.3 million people. And now to business. India's stock market, which became the world's fourth largest earlier this year, swung widely in the wake of a surprise election result that saw Mr. Nawadi's party lose its majority. Having reached a record high after exit polls forecast a landslide for him, the benchmark Sensex index fell by 6% once the results were announced. It recovered a little the next day. The price of shares in companies owned by Gautam Adani, a close associate of Mr. Modi, were hit especially hard. Mexican share prices also dropped after a shock election result, with Claudia Sheinbaum winning the presidency by a bigger-than-expected margin. Investors worried that her congressional majority would allow her to change the Constitution and erode checks and balances. The peso fell, too. America, meanwhile, is gaining a new bourse. The Texas Stock Exchange, which announced that it raised $120 million from investors including BlackRock and Citadel Securities. The exchange aims to rival the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ and to host its first listing in 2026. NVIDIA's market capitalization soared past $3 trillion, leading it to overtake Apple as the world's second biggest company. The chipmaker's share price has risen so much in recent years that it is conducting a 10-for-1 stock split to make smaller trades easier. Shares of GlaxoSmithKline fell sharply after a judge in Delaware ruled that evidence of linking Zantac, a heartburn medication, to cancer cases was admissible in court. The share price of Sanofi, which sells a reformulated version of the drug, also fell. GameStop saw its share price jump by as much as 75% after a photo posted on Reddit seemed to show Keith Gill holding 5 million shares and 120,000 call options in the company. Mr. Gill was an architect of the meme stock craze of 2021, exhorting retail traders to buy shares in order to give hedge funds, several of which had shorted GameStop, a bloody nose. By the time trading stopped on the day of the photo, his position was worth $260 million. Bill Ackman sold 10% share of Pershing Square, the firm through which he managed a closed-end hedge fund with over $15 billion in assets. The deal values his company at more than $10 billion and is thought to be a preclude to a public listing. Boeing launched its CST-100 Starliner spacecraft from Cape Canaveral, Florida, carrying two astronauts from NASA, America's space agency. It was only the sixth launch of a new crew spacecraft in NASA's history. Boeing Starliner program is a rival to one run by Elon Musk's SpaceX. An EU court ruled that McDonald's had lost its Big Mac trademark for chicken burgers, though it will keep it for the better-known beef recipe. The decision followed a long battle between McDonald's and Supermax, an Irish competitor that claimed the trademark was preventing its expansion. An American court dealt with the Securities and Exchange Commission a serious blow by rejecting its proposed rules to force private equity and hedge fund to be more transparent. Championed by Gary Gensler, the regulator's chairman, the rule would have required fund managers to send investors detailed quarterly performance and expense reports. The judge ruled that its imposition would exceed the SEC's statutory authority. Widespread medical use of psychedelics looks less likely after a panel assembled by the American Food and Drug Administration voted against the use of MDMA, the active ingredient in ecstasy, to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. This is bad news for Lykos Therapeutics, a bio firm developing such a treatment. The Bank of Canada lowered its policy rate from 5% to 4.75%, making it the first G7 central bank to lower rates on the cycle. Inflation has fallen to 2.7% from a peak of 8.1% in 2022. Though the central bank's target is 2%, a softening economy may have prompted it to cut early. Canada's unemployment rate hit 6.1% in April. Fears grow that America's economy may also be slowing down after the private sector added fewer jobs than forecast in May. The manufacturing sector contracted too, with factory activity falling. Treasury's yields dropped in response as traders marked up the probability that the Federal Reserve would cut rates sooner rather than later. Global investors have withdrawn $40 billion from environmental, social, and governance funds so far this year, making it the first in which such funds have faced net outflows. A triumph for Indian democracy. The shock election results will change the country, ultimately for the better. The world's biggest electorate has just shown how democracy can rebuke out-of-touch political elites, limit the concentration of power, and change a country's destiny. After a decade in charge, Narendra Modi was forecast to win a landslide victory in this country's election. Yet on June 4th, it became clear that his party had lost its parliamentary majority, forcing him to rule through a coalition. The result partially derails the Modi project to renew India. It will also make politics messier, which has spooked finance markets. And yet it promises to change India for the better. The outcome lowers the risk of the country sliding towards autocracy, buttresses it as a pillar of democracy, and, if Mr. Modi is willing to adapt, opens a new path to reform that can sustain its rapid development. The drama unfolding amid the scorching heat wave begins with the election results. Mr. Modi's party aimed to take up to 370 seats in the 543-member lower house, an even bigger majority than in 2014 or 2019. Instead, it won just 240. It lost seats to regional parties in the heartlands of Uttar Pradesh and beyond, and reflecting a revival of caste-based politics and, it seems, worries about lack of jobs. Whereas his coalition partners were previously optional extras, he will now rely on them to stay in power. Their loyalty is not guaranteed. This is not an electoral upset, but a repudiation of Mr. Modi's doctrine of how to wield power in India. As our new podcast, The Modi Raj, explains, he is a remarkable man born in poverty, schooled in Hindi-first ideology, and consumed by the conviction that he was destined to restore India's greatness. For Mr. Modi, India has been kept down by centuries of rule under Islamic dynasties and British imperialists, followed by independence by socialism and the chaos inherent in diversity and federalism. For over a decade, Mr. Modi's answer has been to concentrate power. That meant winning elections decisively on a platform that emphasizes his own brand, Hindu chauvinism, and an aspirational message of rising prosperity. In office, his method has been to execute might to ram through policies that boost growth and reinforce his party's grip on power. Mr. Modi has changed India for good and ill. Fast growth promises to make its economy the world's third largest by 2027. India has better infrastructure, a new regional welfare system for the poor, and growing geopolitical clout. However, good jobs are too scarce. Muslims suffer discrimination, and under a sinister illiberalism, the party has captured institutions and persecuted the media and opposition. This year's elections were supposed to mark the next phase of the Modi Raj, with an even bigger majority and new presence in richer south of the country. The party aspired to unitary authority across India and the central and state level. That might have made Big Bang reform easier in, say, agriculture, but such power also raised the threat of autocracy. Many in the party hope to forge a single national identity based on Hinduism and the Hindi language, and to change India's liberal constitution, which they view as a effete Western construct. Mr. Modi would have reigned supreme, yet every Raj comes to an end. If, as expected, the party and its allies form the next government, Mr. Modi will have to chair a cabinet that contains other parties and which forces parliamentary scrutiny. This will come as a shock to a man who has always acted as a chief executive with unchallenged authority to take the big decisions. Succession will be debated, especially inside the BJP. Even if Mr. Modi completes a full term, a fourth one is now less likely. Mr. Modi's diminished stature brings dangers. He could resort to Muslim bashing as in the past. That would alienate many Indians, but also possibly repair his authority with his base. Coalition government makes forced through economic change harder. The small parties may gum up decision making as they dominate a share of the spoils. India's growth is likely to fall below its underlying rate of 6-7%, but higher welfare spending may lead to cuts in vital investment. That explains why the stock market initially fell by 6%. These dangers are real, but they also are outweighed by the election promises. Now that the opposition has been revived, India is less likely to become an autocracy. The party and its allies also lack the two-thirds majority they needed to make many constitutional changes. Disappointed investors should remember that most of the value of their assets lies beyond the next 5 years, and that the danger posed by democratic backsliding was not just to India's liberty. If strongmen rule degenerated into an arbitrary exercise of power, it would eventually destroy the property rights that they depend on. More open policies also promise to boost growth in the 2030s and beyond. The election shows that Indians are united by a desire for development, not their Hindu identity. Solving India's huge problems, including too few good jobs, requires faster urbanization and industrialization, which in turn depend on an overhaul of agriculture, education, internal migration, and energy policy. Because the Constitution splits primarily for most of these areas between the central government and the states, the centralization of the past decade may yield diminishing returns. That means the next set of reforms will require consensus. There are precedents. Two of Mr. Modi's main achievements, tax reform and digital welfare, are cross-party ideas that became under previous administrations. India has reforming coalitions before, including this party's led ones. The question facing India is therefore whether Mr. Modi can evolve through a polarizing strongman into a unifying consensus builder. By doing so, he would ensure that India's government was stable, and he would usher in a new sort of Indian politics capable of bringing about the reforms needed to ensure India's transformation can continue when Mr. Modi and his Raj is over. This is what the real greatness would look like for Mr. Modi and his country. Fortunately, if he fails, India's democracy is more than capable of holding him to account. Business and Trump. Don't do it, billionaires. Supporting Donald Trump risks offering wealthy donors poor returns. When Donald Trump faces American voters in November, he will do so with a band of billionaire backers. Last month, Stephen Schwarzman, the chief executive of Blackstone, the world's largest private equity firm, said he would support Mr. Trump. Miriam Adelson, a casino magnate who sat out the primaries, is expected to do the same. Bill Ackman, a hedge fund manager who has previously donated to Democrats, is said to be edging toward a Trump endorsement. The former president even enjoys increasingly friendly relations with Elon Musk, with whom he once traded insults. Joe Biden has raised more money overall, though Mr. Trump has filled his boots since his conviction in a Manhattan courtroom, and some rich Republicans have yet to decide who to back. But the former president's growing support among the wealthy is evidence of his rehabilitation. Business-minded Republican elites have shunned Mr. Trump after he tried to overturn the election results. Today, those same people appear to be looking for a reason to set aside their scruples. The benefit to Mr. Trump is much more than financial. Politicians seek to support the moguls because it is taken as proof that they would be good for the economy. For their part, many billionaires doubtlessly think that their self-interest to back Mr. Trump. He is the narrow favorite to win, and courting him now could secure a valuable payoff for those who crave influence and need political favors or fear his vindictiveness. Businesses and billionaires themselves would benefit directly from Mr. Trump's tax cuts and deregulation. Yet Trump, too, poses a threat to the economy, a greater one than a second Biden presidency. In 2016, many observers, including this paper, fretted about the consequences of Mr. Trump's economic populism, only for America to enjoy strong GDP and jobs growth. This time, however, the economy is closer to its speed limits, meaning that tariffs and debt-financed tax cuts would mean an inflationary surge. If Mr. Trump deported illegal immigrants en masse, as he's promised, he would only add to the pressure. Meanwhile, tax cuts would strain an already porous public finance. In 2016, the budget deficit was 3.2% of GDP, and net debt was 76% of output. Today, America is running an underlying deficit of 7%, and debt is nearly 100%. The Federal Reserve would be forced to offset the stimulus, pushing debt services costs. If Mr. Trump appointed a pliant ally to lead the Fed when the term of its current chairman expires in 2026, the inflation problem could grow bigger still. Mr. Schwartzman has cited the spread of anti-Semitism as the reason for his decision. Yet far from being a campus leftist, Mr. Biden is one of the protesters' targets. Both political extremes and anti-Semitism is a problem. But hard-fought torchbearers marching toward Charlottesville during Mr. Trump's first term, who chanted, "Jews shall not replace us." If Mr. Schwartzman is worried about extremism, he should consider Mr. Trump's ties to the mob that attacked Congress on January 6, 2021. Indeed, Mr. Trump holds many of the American institutions besides elections in contempt, including federal agencies and the courts. When you adjust for the tail risk of something going very wrong, supporting him offers poor returns. A slide towards cronyism on bias would make doing business harder and more politicized and pose a far bigger threat to TAPE. Ordinary Americans may have concluded Mr. Trump is the choice of practical peoples interested in the bottom line. The real message is that he should not be. That's all we have time for today. I've been reading from The Economist magazine dated June 8th, 2024. I'm Sandra Astor-Stave. So long until next time.